fear in the people that the food prices will skyrocket if they do that. Well, that's just fear tactics. We have some labeling, voluntary labeling, on genetically modified products used to make milk, bovine growth hormones. You can buy milk that says no bovine growth hormone. It hasn't skyrocketed the products of the cost of milk.
Well, we have a chapter of your book online at democracynow.org. Sheldon Krimsky, editor and author of a number of contributions in the new book, The GMO Deception, What You Need to Know About the Food Corporations and Government Agencies Putting Our Families and Our Environment at Risk. He is a professor of urban environmental policy and planning at Tufts University, as well as adjunct professor in Department of Public Health and Family Medicine at Tufts School of Medicine. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. I'll be speaking in Oslo, Norway, Saturday. Saturday night. Stay with me. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. There's only 1 week left till the November election, so we'll talk about that.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, November 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. for election night coverage. Lisa Loving, Delphine Crescenzo, and Don Merrill will host 3 hours of talk about the elections from the KBOO perspective and include special guests, KBOO reporters in the field, and members of Oregon community media phoning in from all over the state. We'll talk candidates, measures, winners-losers, voter disenfranchisement, and more. Again, that's Tuesday, November 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Most work in the tech industry is done in small groups, with the idea being that two heads are better than one. To get the best ideas, you need diversity. However, the majority of people working in the tech industry are white, male, and fairly young. Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. for The Digital Divide and the Talent Divide, Who Makes Up the Tech Industry? Part 3 of Startup City, How the New Tech Boom is Changing Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Muertos Northwest's 6th annual celebration under the bridge on Dia de los Muertos, Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m. This year's celebration will include the creation of altars, sugar skull decorations,
why now is the
Muertos face painting for all ages, Muertos storytelling, and live music by Los Tex-Maniacs. Again, that's Muertos Northwest's 6th annual celebration under the bridge, Saturday, November 1st from 1 p.m. to midnight at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Chillin', tell you right now. You better watch and think about yourself. Be careful how you vote, y'all.
Yeah, good morning, good morning, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris. Abe is going to be late. Oh, ho, ho. We will give him some, you know what. But he's going to be rushing in any second now.
The number to call is 231-8187. Abe and I talked about this, and both of us decided we really need to spend a little more time doing two things. First of all, urging you to vote, actually vote, and second of all, talking about some of the ballot measures, which are pretty mysterious. We cannot, under our mandate, discuss candidates, but everything else we can. In fact, there is a ballot measure, number 90, which would really change the way elections take place in Oregon. And there is vast sums of money pouring into an effort to make sure that we do not identify genetically modified organisms in our food. It's a kind of an exciting campaign, and it's really interesting to see where the money comes out and how it works and whether it'll actually work here in Oregon the way it has in other states. So there's a lot to talk about. And we do want to hear from you, and we do hope that some of you will have opinions differing from ours, and that this will be a lively conversation. I guess I'll start by talking about the local measures, the parks and the schools. These are measures where, in my point of view, I wish Abe were here because he might disagree with me, you hold your nose and you hope for the best and you vote for them. Because you really do want to support teachers, you really do want to support the bond levy, the money levy for the parks. Now, to be clear, neither of these will raise your taxes. On the other hand, if you fail to support them, I suppose some part of your tax money will go down. And this really is, again, an issue where you have to have some faith, and I'm not sure how much faith people have in the process of education and in the process of public parks. From my experience in life over the years, beginning when I was barely a toddler, public parks were incredibly valuable, incredibly important asset. And I, in those early years, grew up in New York City, in Brooklyn, Far Rockaway, and other places. And parks were really, 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 really a great place to go. The seesaws, the jungle gyms, the sandboxes, and so on. But beyond that, as you grow older, there's space for various competitive games, all kinds of stuff, including swimming pools, you know? Now, is there a better way to finance that? Is there a better way to finance schools? Very possibly. Are they on the ballot? Well, here's the point. They're not. It is absolutely imperative that our schools be as good as they can possibly be. Abe's here, ladies and gentlemen. He's here. He's got a suit jacket on. He's got a hat. He's putting his earphones on. Hi, Abe.
It's a jungle out there, man.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Hello.
A jungle
out there?
It's a jungle out there.
It's a jungle out there. It's just raining.
Yeah.
Okay. We wanted to share with you Abe's arrival because it's always a grand and exciting moment. Horns blow.
Yeah, okay. Are you done now?
Yeah, I'm done teasing you. You can resume your role. I just said, just so you know, that people should support the local measures on schools and parks. Do you disagree?
I would agree with that, yes.
Okay, so we can move on.
Yep.
Where do you want to go next, Abe?
I want to go, what's the number of ballot measures I'd like to talk about?
And they're important.
They are quite important.
Yeah.
The most important, in my mind, is Measure 92.
Which is?
The labeling of genetically modified ingredients in
food. Oh, that's bad. That's bad.
Yeah. See, this is this is a microcosm of everything that's wrong with our electoral system right now. This is a no-brainer. We should absolutely know what's in our food.
Yeah.
We have a right to know what we're putting in our bodies. Do we not?
No.
No.
No, apparently not.
Yeah, apparently not. There are huge, huge sums of money being spent, a lot of it coming from out of state to defeat this measure.
Monsanto.
Because apparently the folks who don't want you to know what you're putting in your body.
No, it's not that. It's an imperfect measure. You see, it will create higher prices for the...
Shut up. We have a right to know what's in our food. End of story.
Really?
All right. So there's a lot of money being spent to defeat this measure. Why? I suspect it has something to do with the fact that if we knew what we were putting in our bodies, we might not put as much of it in or any of it at all. And then all of a sudden they might have to rethink what the food system actually delivers to our plates.
Ooh. You're talking radical stuff now.
It shouldn't be radical.
It should be logical and reasonable.
This should be the baseline for our civilization.
I should be serious and I should be clear. Look, this measure should be a no-brainer. It's obvious that nothing about it will stop them, whoever they might be, from making genetically modified foods available to you. All it will do is require you, require them to tell you that they've done that. So when you buy a can of green beans or peaches or something, it will say on it if there are genetically modified ingredients.
Yeah, and then it's up to you to whether or not you want to consume it. And
right.
That's really as it should be. I would hope people knowing what they're eating would choose to eat something free of genetically modified ingredients. I would hope so.
You have something against two-headed babies?
I'd rather not have one.
Well, I'd rather be twice as smart.
Dude. Rather my baby had one head. All right, now let's step back a little bit and look at this a little more objectively.
Sure.
The notion of genetic modification is nothing new. We have been genetically modifying both the vegetables we eat and the animals we eat for as long as I'm putting civilization in scare quotes here, but as long as we've been raising crops and as long as we've been breeding livestock. The act of selective breeding mm-hmm. is an act of genetic modification. So, you know, it's not something to throw your head up back about and scream necessarily. But what we're talking about in terms of this measure is modification that's been done in a laboratory, modification that's been done to crops so that they can be pesticide resistant or herbicide
resistant.
Well,
that's the most important point, in fact.
Right.
It allows pesticides to be on the food, pesticides that would normally kill the food, because it's been genetically modified to withstand these horrible chemicals. And then we now know that the genetic modification only holds for a certain amount of time. They have to redo the process because they need ever stronger poisons. Because the little animals become resistant.
Ever larger quantities of ever stronger poison.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look this up during the show, but over the past several decades, as these crops have become more and more prominent, the tonnage of herbicide and pesticides that's being applied to fields has skyrocketed. And, of course, by extension, the amount of the stuff that ends up running into streams and rivers and in oceans has skyrocketed as well.
Right.
Yeah, it's a bad news. We need to know what we're eating so that we can bring this thing to a stop.
Well, and there's two states that have this on the ballot. One's Colorado, the other's Oregon. And the amount of money being poured in from outside interests, chiefly from the chemical industry, is amazing. And the ads are amazing. The actors in the ads on television, always attractive and seemingly knowledgeable people, being paid boku buck to appear on camera, is scary.
Yeah. I keep hearing this. Yes, it'll increase the amount of money you spend at the grocery store. But nobody, at least to my knowledge, has explained how or why. Why would that make food more expensive?
Well,
they just keep
selling.
They just keep saying,
I don't know.
Well,
that's
a rhetorical question. Listeners, if you have the answer to that, please call in and let us know. So if food will allegedly become more expensive, why? What is the mechanism there? Is it simply, are we talking about a one-time cost to redo the label on food? That would seem to me to be relatively inexpensive. And something that would averaged out over millions of units of whatever it is you're selling amounts to next to nothing. That's just a change in the amount of ink you put on your label. Big deal.
But you do understand that the agribusiness world depends on these powerful, poisonous chemicals.
They do. And here's sort of the ugly endgame of genetic modification in the food industry. Monsanto, I'll use Monsanto because they're probably the most egregious violator here. They have developed a strain of corn, and this is just one example. The heritage of farming, since farming was invented, was that every farmer, every time they harvest a crop, will retain a little bit of seed to plant again next year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what farming is all about. You retain these seeds, you plant them again the next year, you raise a crop again the next year. That is the legacy of the earth that is symbolic in so many ways. It is one of the oldest parts of being part of human civilization, is this annual renewal of one's crops through the husbanding and the saving of seeds. But these seeds developed by Monsanto, you can't do that. The seeds you harvest after a crop can't be planted the next year. You have to go back to Monsanto and buy more seeds. This takes the very agricultural heritage of the earth takes it from the hands of farmers and puts it in the hands of corporate agribusiness.
Well, in fact, in Mexico, where corn, a large variety of corns existed, we're seeing mono agriculture more and more, and we're seeing farmers driven off the land in Mexico, pushed into the cities, in fact, pushed up north. To a great extent. The reason for these massive migrations is that small landholders cannot maintain their operations because the cost of seed, the cost of the pesticides, and so on, has driven them off the land.
Yeah, it's bad news all around.
I mean, it really is bad news all around. And, of course, the government of the United States supports agribusiness in enormous ways. We grow way more soybeans and corn. Corn is then turned into sugar, fructose, mm-hmm. and that is put into all kinds of stuff. We're coming to the great holiday of tooth decay coming up this, Thursday, isn't it? Friday is the holiday of tooth decay. And all of us, most of us, willingly turn a light on and wear costumes and have a good time and vaguely make reference to the fear of death. And in our children, and essentially push tooth decay. And that tooth decay is largely due to the fact that candy is a major source of income for so many, many, many food companies.
You sure know how to ruin a good time, Joe.
Well, yeah. I mean, when I was a little kid, you got maybe 5 or 6, maybe even 10, maybe 20, if you were really in a nice neighborhood, pieces of preppy candy. But now,
yeah kids today eating too much candy, blah blah blah. Let's move on.
All right. Moving on.
All right, so
never mind, just vote for the labeling. This is, let's be clear, this does not prevent you from eating genetically modified foods. No. All it requires is that you know when you are eating such foods.
Yeah, that seems to me to be
very fair,
the very baseline of what we ought to know is what we're eating.
But you know, they're right. Pouring millions of dollars in.
They are. And here in Vermont passed a similar measure to this a while back. Yeah. And they're now being sued by 4 different food industry business groups.
Really?
Yeah, saying that the labeling requirement is unconstitutional.
Why is that? I mean, why are they claiming that?
I really don't know.
I mean, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
So giving information is unconstitutional?
Yeah, apparently so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder.
Yeah, it really does. Here's what the trade groups involved in this lawsuit say. They're calling the labeling requirement, quote, a costly and misguided measure that will set the nation on a path toward a 50-state patchwork of GMO labeling policies that will do nothing to advance the health and safety of consumers. With zero justification in health, safety, or science, the state of Vermont has imposed a burdensome mandate on manufacturers that unconstitutionally compels speech. And all I see,
compelling speech.
It's a question of freedom of speech. Well, we've already determined that money is speech when it comes to funding political campaigns.
Clearly.
So clearly, ink is speech when you're making Frankenfood for people to eat. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think I mean, if you want to talk about this some more, but I think enough. Look, if you first of all, 2 things: you should vote. You out there should vote. And second of all, this measure is clearly in your favor. You really want to know what's in your food. There's no way that this is harmful.
Yes, and I agree. We ought to move on from this. And I want to say one more thing about it.
Okay.
Don't. Seriously, don't be fooled by arguments like this one. The trade group saying that measures like this will set the nation on a path toward a 50-state patchwork of GMO labeling policies. Well, so what? Who cares? I mean, one might think about that if one is an organized and rational person and say, it makes far more sense to pass one nationwide GMO labeling law with the federal government. Would that not make more sense? Would that not be easier? Would that not be more uniform?
With a bought Congress?
Right, but that's never ever going to happen. The only way that we as eaters of food, raise your hand if you eat food, okay?
Yeah.
As eaters of food, the only way we're going to know what we're putting in our bodies is if we pass ballot measures like this one at a time around the country, because the federal government ain't going to do it.
Right.
Right.
Okay, we got some calls. Should we take some calls? 231-8187. Who do we got?
BJ, good morning.
Good morning. a pesticide who used to be a human being. Hello, how are you? I'm not a pesticide. I'm a thinking human being. And are you there?
Yeah, yes. We're hearing you, man.
Okay, what I want to ask you is about this. They spent $4.5 million, it was mentioned, and I don't know if it's Monsanto or which one, but they all together, I guess, to control food. Does that mean when I go to Wendy's, I will be getting this kind of food? No.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. Right now you will. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't have the money to shop in many places anymore. I used to, but
well, Wendy's is not, and all the other lovely places with fast food are not a food bargain. You're going to have to realize that. And this is seriously, the only way that you can really live cheap is to buy real food and cook it for yourself. You have to buy real, for example, real rice, real potatoes, real bread. You have to buy real, if you eat meat, you have to buy real meat. You have to cook it. Cooking food is labor, which pays off because you get a cheaper, healthier diet. It's just the way it is. Every time you go to one of those grease places, you're eating grease.
Yeah, grease. I hear you. And I'm going to follow your advice. And the other is, between your, especially Abe, when you're talking about issues there, you bring them up long periods of time and you're getting a big queue of people. And usually I don't get on, but this time I called at 7 o'clock. And then we miss out because we don't get in on your queue. You know, you're not on very
well. Well, listen, we call this talk radio and we try to get as many people in.
You're doing a good thing, but that's just a suggestion, okay. Joe.
All right, listen, I'm going to let you go.
No, Joe, one other thing. Yeah, Rush Limbaugh sent me an 8x10 photograph of myself, and it says vote no on 90.
Oh. Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, I got one of those as well. I really don't know what that is.
Well, we're going to talk about 90 in a little bit.
It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that.
Okay.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call, man.
Thank you.
Where are we in the numbers? You jumped the queue.
I did. Well, is there a queue?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, numerical order is so
numerical
passe.
Numerical order is so what passe?
Yeah. Who else is on the phone, Steve? Michael, good morning.
Good morning.
All right.
Michael, you said untruths the other day, but I'm forgiving you. Go ahead.
I said what?
Untruths.
No, we're not going there.
Never mind. Ignore me.
Talk about what you're going to talk about, Michael.
Whoops. Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, the thing about Oregon measures that really bothers me is that they go up to 99 and they start over again at 1. They seem not to know that there's an infinite supply of numbers.
Well, that seems like, while interesting and true, kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, I know, but I just, as a computer science professor, I wanted to...
You wanted to assert the necessity of numbers beyond 100?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Second of all, I, in a misguided attempt to figure out what career I should go into, went to medical school for 2 years, and they had in the hallway, in a big glass case full of formaldehyde, an actual two-headed baby.
Oh. Well, that is reassuring.
Which is really scary to look at. But now what I want to talk about is the GMO measure.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So genetic engineering has produced a couple of products that you might be interested in. One is called golden rice. Little kids are going blind all over the third world because they don't get enough vitamin A.
Oh, I know about this. Yeah.
But they all eat rice. And...
So you're saying that genetic engineering can be good?
Genetic engineering developed a strain of rice with vitamin A in it, and vitamin A is yellow, you know, it's like what's in carrots, or orange. So it makes the rice look this gold color.
Yeah.
And I watched a show on PBS about 2 months ago where this mob of Luddite morons in Philippines invaded a lab where they were growing this stuff and pulled all the rice out of the ground and had themselves just a wild old time destroying this stuff. And meanwhile, little kids are going blind, and the only difference between this rice and the other rice, and normal rice, is that it's got more vitamin A in it.
Well, wait, Michael. I want to backtrack a little bit here. Before we get into the discussion of the possibility of genetically modified organisms that can be good, let's just talk about the notion of labeling, which is not about stopping anything. It's only about informing people. You do see that difference, right?
I see that difference, except I see that as a surface difference. I think that the real motivation behind this measure is that it's a way to take a swipe at and make it more difficult to sell genetically modified stuff motivated by people who really hate the idea of genetic engineering.
Hey, you might be right about that.
I see a motive underneath the surface of this seemingly innocuous labeling.
Well, you know, you're probably correct. I imagine there are supporters of the measure who do feel that way.
Yeah, and so you know, yeah, I know, on the surface it's just about labeling. Second of all, talking about the labeling, there's another genetically modified agricultural crop. It's a tomato that has some DNA from a fish in it. And I think, if I remember right, that's so that it will be harder for it to freeze in a place where the temperature, like in Florida, where they sometimes have freezes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, okay, the tomato, this frankenfood, it's a tomato with some fish DNA in it. If you ever ate a tuna fish sandwich with tomato slices on it, you were eating basically exactly the same thing.
No, Michael, that's, you know better than that. You're a smart guy. Come on.
I don't know better than that.
Those are two foods eaten in combination. That is not a piece of food with its genome altered.
No, what I'm saying is the contents of your stomach end up exactly the same.
But Michael,
you have fish DNA in your stomach and you have a tomato in your stomach.
Michael, you do understand that genetically modified organisms, as currently used, I'm not going to get into an abstract discussion of the value of GMOs per se, because that's a long and difficult conversation. But just what is being done today has produced some real hardships and has increased the price of seed and has put the farmer at an enormous disadvantage and made him or her essentially a servant of the chemical industry. You understand that because you understand economics, right?
I do understand that. And if there was a measure against things like that instead of painting an entire technology in a negative light, if you wanted to make a measure that said, don't put pesticides in our food, I'd probably support it. If you wanted to make a measure that said, don't do something bad economically to farmers, I'd probably support it. But if you say, oh, we're going to make everybody afraid of genetically engineered food and, you know, destroy the possibility of things like golden rice, then I'm not for it.
Yeah, I don't think Joe and I are saying that.
Well, you may not be, but that's kind of how I see the measure.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on this. I want to give others an opportunity, man.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
All right. I want to... what Michael said was untrue. Eating a tuna fish sandwich with tomato on it is not equivalent to eating a piece of tomato with fish DNA in it. Those are two fundamentally different things. I'm not sure why he gave that answer. That's a red herring or a red tuna. I don't know.
Well, I don't know, you know.
But
yeah, last time I had a tomato, it had scales. It's really scared to
have. Nice and a tail.
And a tail.
Yeah. Engineer Steve points out that the majority of genetically modified crops are not attempts at beneficent modification like this vitamin A-enhanced rice.
Yeah.
They are made to resist pesticides and herbicides. And they are made as a boon to the chemical and agribusiness industries, or even contain pesticides within the fruit or vegetable itself.
Yeah, I really want to be clear about this because apparently there is some confusion. Look, is all this measure does, you can argue that it's to scare you. If telling you what is or is not genetically modified scares you, okay. I can live with that. But the fact of the matter is, knowing is always better than not knowing.
Absolutely.
That's just a rule.
Absolutely.
There's very few rules, but that's a rule.
Yes. And Michael's point is well taken. There is a group among the populace for whom genetically modified foods are a boogeyman, regardless of what the modification is.
And I'm one of them.
Or why?
I want to volunteer.
Okay, that's fine.
I think that without generations of testing, this is a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, I would say that it's probably a healthy idea to approach the notion of genetic modification cautiously. There's always unforeseen consequences, particularly when we start monkeying with the genome of something.
Mm-hmm.
But really, when it comes right down to it, all this measure is about is labeling.
Knowing is better than not knowing. Okay, let's. We have other measures too.
Yes, we do. We also got a phone call. Let's go back to the phone. Sherry, good morning.
I do want to talk about the labeling one, and maybe I could be the last one.
No, that's
Okay, so you kind of said an untruth, Abe, and
What's that?
You said we have been genetically modifying since we've been growing vegetables from the beginning.
Yes.
And genetic modification, as the term is used and as it's understood, or genetic engineering, GE or GMO, genetic modified organisms, is not been from the beginning. Breeding and selecting for desired traits is not genetic engineering.
It is.
Well, actually, Abe, I disagree with you.
I
think when you're talking about genetic engineering, you're specifically talking about altering the genome through a process that
through
is
through a
not,
laboratory process.
Yeah, that is not a, that is not the way in which traditionally
it's
one breeds.
Kingdoms. No time did man in their breeding take the gene from one animal and put it in a vegetable, or from a bacteria and put it in an animal. That's what they're doing. They're crossing kingdoms, and that does not happen in nature.
I agree with you.
They've never done that.
I agree with you, and that's an important distinction. But it's also important for us to acknowledge the fact that we have been working to alter genomes in ways beneficial to us for thousands of years.
Yeah, but that's not genetic engineering. That's selective breeding, and that is what
it is. That selective breeding
Is
a form of genetic engineering.
I think Abe and I disagree on this. I agree with you,
Jerry.
And I think that there's really a great deal of difference between, for example, animal husbandry or breeding animal or breeding plants, and the processes involved in this.
Yes.
In this
new technology. I'm agreeing with you. I'm stipulating to that point.
But why do you insist on
it? It's called genetic engineering because it's humans are but it's just called breeding.
That's right. I'm trying to say to you that breeding is a means of genetic modification that humans have undertaken
like
for
I
thousands
said,
of years.
The way that the term is used now, the way it's understood, that's where you're crossing kingdoms, and that is not breeding.
I agree. Again, I think we're chasing each other around here.
I think she makes a valid
point. Yeah, we are arguing semantics.
But we are arguing semantics.
But we don't need to confuse people. I mean,
I agree. I agree with you.
I agree with you. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to encourage critical thinking. I'm trying to say to people they should not run in fear when they hear a particular term like genetic modification.
I'm not sure that they shouldn't, because I think it means a specific thing.
Other point. Can I say my other point?
Sure.
That I was surprised that Michael said that, you know, he thinks labeling is trying to scare people. If these companies, if Monsanto and Dow, who have invested billions and billions of dollars into genetic engineering, and they think it's a great thing, and they say it's going to help feed the world, then why aren't they blazing that on the label? Why aren't they saying, hey, this is great new technology. This is going to save the world. We're proud of our genetic engineering.
Right, because they think they're going to be able to sell fewer products if people know what they're eating.
That's such a misleading argument to say that it's to scare people, and it's not superficial, and to say that it's just to scare people is... That's our side. You know, to me, genetic engineering is kind of scary because it hasn't been thoroughly tested at all.
Yep.
And so to say that it's scary is the exact opposite of what the pro people should be saying.
Right,
it's not scary. It's great. It's a great thing.
I think Michael is a conservative by character, and I think he's falling into a trap that a lot of conservatives, and in fairness, a lot of liberals make, and that is to have a sort of knee-jerk reaction when one attempts to evaluate the motives and attitudes of another group of people.
Mm-hmm.
He says, the hippies are scared about this, therefore I must not agree with them.
And he also enjoys being a devil's advocate. I don't mean to impute or suggest motive by on the part of anybody, but you know, look, this is a really, to me, this is such a no-brainer. Knowing is better than not knowing.
Right. I saw a picture of a Hershey's bottle of Hershey's chocolate sauce, the stuff that you squeeze in your milk to make it be chocolate milk, and it was in Europe, and it was just a close-up of the picture of the label, and it looked exactly like the labels on our Hershey bottles, except for it said sugar, and then in parentheses it said made with genetically engineered sugar beets, in parentheses, onto the next ingredient. It's such a no big deal.
Right.
You know, they're making such a big deal about it. It's like that way, if someone thinks that they might have allergies to it, just like we have to say if it's got peanuts or gluten or whatever now, you know, then they could just sort of make more informed decisions. I don't think it's superficial at all. Some people would choose to not eat genetically engineered stuff if they'd known about it, but it's been so hidden and slyly, you know, generally accepted as safe and all that other stuff, that people don't have a choice. And so this is this really is about letting people have a choice. It seems like
I totally agree.
I agree with you, and I think in the end Abe does too. But I think one of the things that must be considered here is the economic impact, the horrible economic impact of genetic engineering on third world farmers. The whole situation in India, the whole situation in Mexico, etc. We, that is the powerful corporate chemical industry, have really messed with people's lives in a terrible way. And all this is doing, unfortunately, I would like stronger laws. All this is doing is saying you get to know what's in your food.
Right.
Or at least some of what's in your food.
Right. And the thing about the golden rice could be a good thing. But from what I understand, the reason why kids are going blind there, it's kind of a newer phenomenon, because they don't eat vegetables. They don't eat the traditional greens, at least according to Vandana Shiva. They don't eat the traditional foods that they ate. They're trying to eat a mixed diet of their traditional diet or whatever they used to eat, and then modern chemical foods and McDonald's in India, and that's why they're lacking in nutrients. But, you know, if they could change their... I don't know. That's not something that we would grow here anyway. The main things that are grown here that are genetically modified are corn and soybeans. It's by far the main thing.
Yep.
And the main thing they're genetically modified to do is to resist spraying with chemicals. And the whole thing about the GMO argument was that, we're going to reduce the use of pesticide. We're going to reduce the use of Roundup by making these crops be resistant to Roundup. We won't have to spray so much. And it's like... Well, now, someone could think about that. If a company is making a chemical called Roundup, and then they're making a crop that resists Roundup, why would they even want to make something that would make consumers buy less of their other product?
Well, and in fact, what's happened is that the as nature triumphs over intention of corporations, we're discovering they have to use more and more of Roundup or other chemicals. So it's a never-ending cycle of destruction. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, there are some other measures on the ballot.
Yeah, I think we should talk about some of these other measures on the ballot. I think it's very, very important.
Should we use your much-vaunted numerical order?
Much-vaunted numerical order? You mean like 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yes, that's
numerical. What happens order when we get to 100?
Well, I don't know. Maybe our heads explode. Wait, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, James Bopp and David Cobb. Cobb and Bopp debate Citizens United. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report from Mexico City on the kidnap/torture killing of 43 Mexican student activists by members of a major drug cartel. And the weekly report from the Electronic Intifada, hosted by Nora Barrows-Friedman. And at 11 on Stage and Studio, host D.M.A. Roberts focuses on Shaking the Tree Theater's adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death. That's one of my favorite Poe stories, by the way.
Like the movie version.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. She also features Organic Nation Listening Club, a music performance evening by jazz and world music composer David Ornette Cherry. And 11:30 Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear the La Penca bombing remembered. 30 years ago, a bomb went off in a press conference in La Penca, Nicaragua. Journalists and others are still trying to get answers about the bombing.
Yeah, lots of luck with that. I want to talk about Measure 90 a little bit.
Okay.
Since we're not really following a numerical order here.
No, we're not.
I think this is a very insidious measure. What it essentially says on the face of it is, look, political parties dominate the politics. Let's get rid of that, right? Mm-hmm. And let's just take the top two vote-getters on the ballot and forget about the political parties.
Right.
Well, what this really does is allow money to slam in there unabated and essentially to take away the power of what has evolved as a less than ideal political party system. Now,
less than ideal?
Less than ideal.
Okay.
Now, I think
harsh words.
I think this is a measure, though, that is not a good idea. I think this process does not increase the number of voters. It really doesn't increase representation for the so-called 375,000 people who aren't party registered people. What it really does is allow money untrammeled power. in the electoral process.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And
what
I really, really think that while the political parties, the Tweedledums and Tweedledees that we all abhor, are inadequate and do not represent the spectrum of politics, the solution is not to make those two parties even weaker.
Agreed. Now, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, if this measure were to, A, open the primaries, B, give us, say, five finalists from which to choose in the general election instead of two, and it implemented instant runoff voting, then it might be something worth voting for. But it doesn't do any of those things.
No, and it's not designed to do any of those things.
No.
And unfortunately, and I, you know, I've had conversations about this with some of my wealthier friends, and what I see is a pattern, a clear pattern of support for this measure by people whose incomes are higher.
Mm-hmm.
And what I also see is a real concern about this by groups who are concerned with the rights of workers and so on. It isn't a good system that we have.
No.
This is not a repair to that bad system.
No, it isn't.
So I would say no on 90.
I'm with you there.
What about the marijuana, man?
I'm voting for it. Oh, I got
it. But listen, I want to say something about this. I'm going to vote for it because I want to see the people that are in jail for smoking dope, smoking marijuana out of jail. And I want to see the end of the criminalization that is going on for the drug. But what this measure is also going to do is create very expensive state marijuana.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen is you're going to have bootlegging. You're going to have a lot of independent growers who are going to produce just as good marijuana as the state, who are going to sell it without the process of taxation.
That sounds much like the current production and distribution system.
Very much so, except that there's no legality now, except for people who have a condition.
Yes.
You know, attention deficit disorder, here, smoke some marijuana. Is that possible? No.
I don't know.
I don't know. Cancer, yeah. I don't know. But I mean, I'm going to vote for it, but it's, to me, it's not, I don't, it's no big deal.
No, it really isn't. The way marijuana laws and other drug laws, for that matter, are enforced are arbitrary, capricious, racist, and regressive in the extreme.
Absolutely.
Expensive in the extreme.
So for those reasons, I would support the measure.
Yeah.
Just to get it off the backs of working people, basically, of poorer people.
Yeah. Agreed. And people of color.
Yeah.
Should we go to the phones?
Yeah.
All right. Who's next, Steve? Andrew, good morning. Hello.
Andrew, are you there?
All right. Well, let's try to come back to Andrew if we can. Who else we have? Harvey, good morning.
Hi, Abe and Joe.
Hi.
Well, about the GMO stuff.
Yeah.
Excuse me. We're the test subjects, and our eating habits are tracked. I go to the store now. They never even ask for cash anymore. They want debit or credit, which means that there's a record of everything I bought. Yeah, that information is another commodity for the stores. And Monsanto and the industrial medical complex buy up this information, and they gleam through it. They understand the mathematics, and they can work out logarithms where, you know, you come into a certain category. They know to market certain, maybe, you know, drugs to you because you ate certain foods, too much sugar, so maybe you have diabetes, and then all of a sudden these ads show up. But there's a lot of ways. But the more important point is I went to Google this morning, and I put in the words, just on a chance, I put in the words obesity and GMO, and here's some of the titles of the articles. Is how it says genetically modified foods may be why we're fat. Our GMO is making us fat. It says GMO foods may be playing a bigger role in America's obesity epidemic that was previously thought. Also, they contribute to different types of your guts and all that. They really mess around with our organs. They disrupt our. Here's another: GMO corn contributing to obesity disrupts organs. Just put in, read it yourself. Just go to Google or your favorite search engine. Put in GMO foods and the word obesity, and a lot of information comes up. There may be a tie in here. So, we got to know what we eat, and I think that labeling is the fair way to go. Otherwise, we're just victims of a giant chemical test that who knows who's going to get sick.
No, we agree with you, and yep. I thank you for the call, man.
Sure, thank you.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it.
Who else we got, Steve? Who's next? Mike, good morning. Mike?
Hello, good morning.
Hi. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm from Clark County, Washington.
Uh-huh.
I want to thank you for putting the labeling issue of GE foods on the ballot. There's nothing more important on your voting docket this year. There's a lot of wonderful housekeeping stuff and local stuff that's really important, but to make this world a better place and be historical, this is it. Mm. Vote no. Or vote yes on, vote yes on labeling.
Right on, man. Thank you.
We could go on for hours and we could fill the whole day.
Well, we can, and the station has.
So I appreciate you letting me put that out there. Thanks.
You bet. Thanks. Okay, what's next on our docket or on our ballot?
We got 88.
We got 88. Okay.
This is a hard one, really. It amends the Constitution, requiring creation of a fund for Oregonians pursuing post-secondary education.
Oh, that's not 88.
86. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You're right.
All right, 86.
Okay. Well, here's the deal with this. I try to figure out what its implications are. How will the money be distributed? And I don't understand that there's a way in this measure. I assume it throws it back to the legislature to figure out how to give the money. Is it going to give the money as loans to students? Is it going to give grants to students? It's unclear to me. And if somebody out there knows the answer to that, I would like to hear from them. Because it's really a puzzle. Now, I have been, I'm retired now, but most of my career was in higher education. And indeed, I have seen the cost of higher education skyrocket.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can remember when community colleges were a small fee thing, and even the universities. And the University of California, for example, was a relatively inexpensive institution. The highest cost were books. And I've seen this become more and more an elitist phenomenon as the educational establishment became more and more significant in requirements for jobs. But I need to understand how this measure will help the average student and will not create a real indebtedness problem for the state of Oregon. 1% of the state's income would go to this project. But I don't see where in the measure it is clear that the students will directly receive the money as grants.
It's not. Section 4 of the measure's text reads, mm-hmm. The Legislative Assembly may enact legislation to carry out the provisions of this article.
Right.
So the law or the measure establishes the fund. The legislature then figures out how it's going to administer the fund and disperse the money.
And I'm assuming, since it's going to cost money, that it's going to be loans again.
I don't know.
And loans generally are administered through the banks, and the banks generally rip people off. So I'm really dubious about it. I guess I support it, sort of, but it really, really makes me nervous. And I wonder if there's someone out there who can help me understand this.
I'm voting for it.
Well, don't you have a conflict of interest here?
No.
No. No conflict
no.
of interest. Okay.
All right, measure 87.
What's that?
It's the measure that comes after 86
in
numerical order.
Okay.
All right.
Oops. Amends the Constitution, permits employment of state. Oh, this is okay. Permits employment of state judges by the National Guard, military service, and state public universities for teaching purposes. It just frees these people up, who presumably are knowledgeable about the law, to teach in both the National Guard and the university system. I don't see a problem with that.
Do they teach in the National Guard or they serve in the National Guard? I believe it's service in the National Guard. And when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, you expressed some reservations because of the way the National Guard has been politicized.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. I don't know what to do with that one.
I'm all right with it. I think if somebody is a judge and that person wants to teach some law school classes, that's fine. They can't.
Not in the state system, but they can in the private system.
And they can in the private system, yeah.
Yeah.
And if they want to serve in the National Guard, I'm all right with that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one.
Yep. I'm voting yes.
All right.
Cheryl, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to say 231-8187. Go ahead.
Okay. I find it's such a dichotomy, and this has been bothering me for weeks now, pardon me, that there's such concern about the GMO measure, mm-hmm. and I think largely the very erudite lady who spoke earlier about this is indicating that that measure in itself is largely based on fear from the population. I think the general population is extremely, let's say I've maybe learned now about what we should be or should not be putting into our bodies, and i.e. the fellow that mentioned the overweightness associated with GMO altering. Here's my concern. Why do we have such an intense concern about that, but we're just hung at gung-ho to put marijuana in our bodies? It has been proven in many, many studies that it is injurious to the body, to the brain in particular. So are we looking at this? And the measures are even, you know, adjoining. They're, you know, one and two. So it's a total dichotomy. I think people ought to be looking at that. The GMO, as you explained, is not necessarily inhibiting anything, but just making sure that we know that it is on there, just as vitamin A and so on. Which brings up also a point that I wanted to make about Michael's take on the golden rice. Rather than altering it with some type of GMO alteration process, why not just add vitamin A if that is the necessary ingredient for that particular part of the country? It's a very confusing, each one is confusing. I don't understand for a moment trying to put something proven into our bodies, marijuana, that will do over a long haul damage to the body, but yet at the same time thinking GMO is a really a terrible thing. So let's make our minds up. Can we think in a straight way rather than dichotomizing it? That's my take today.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure. Well, yeah, thank you for the call. To answer your question, I don't think there are inconsistencies there. I think the operative concept in both cases is choice. We deserve to know what we're eating so we can choose whether or not to put it in our bodies. And likewise, we have the choice to put marijuana in our bodies or not.
Well, similar to alcohol in that respect. But I disagree with the caller on the extent of damage. I think that when you smoke something, you obviously are inhaling alien particles. That can't be good for you. On the other hand, when you drink alcohol, you're putting a toxin in your body, and that can't be good for you. We allow alcohol now, mm-hmm. and I don't see how this is functionally different than that.
No.
In fact, what I can tell, marijuana is less impairing than alcohol.
Yeah, well, we could debate that question for a long time. But to get to the caller's point, I disagree that there's an inconsistency there. It's about choice in both cases and knowledge.
Okay, well, I think we want to go on to number 88.
Yep.
Which I think is quite important, actually. 88 is the driver's card measure. This is a measure that makes, to me, absolute sense.
Oh, see, I'm still on the fence about it.
What, really?
Yeah.
All right, look. You are, let us say, a undocumented person.
Okay.
You drive in a truck for a living.
Sure.
Or you're driving your kids to school or whatever.
I'm in constant fear that I'm going to be found out.
You're in constant fear you're going to be found out. Now, I want you to be trained as a driver. I want you to know the law on driving.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to understand speed limits. And I want you to understand the function of the system.
Yep.
And you get a card after you've taken the tests and passed that says, hey, you know, as good as anybody is, you're a good driver.
Right. But here's the problem. My boss hired me because I'm an undocumented immigrant, and he can pay me off the books $5 an hour, which is far less expensive than—
I don't think anyone's actually working. Well, anyway, go ahead.
Which is far less expensive than he would have to pay me if I were a documented resident or a citizen. So he wants me to vote, and I can't vote because I'm an undocumented immigrant.
Yeah, okay,
but he wants this measure to pass so that I can get this driver's card. He can go on paying me substandard wages, but he can be secure in the knowledge that he won't have to go find another driver if I get busted.
So you're saying that this enables people to hire undocumented workers?
I'm saying
that's pretty arcane.
See, that's why I'm on the fence about this. On the one hand, issuing driver's cards is an acknowledgement of the basic humanity of people who are here performing essential tasks in our economy.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Yes. And it makes sure that they have passed a driver's test.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. But on the other hand, doing so also legitimizes a system that's inherently unequal.
I don't see that.
There's a large number of undocumented people in this country doing a whole bunch of jobs across a range of industries.
Yes.
Mostly they are treated with a wink and a nod. There are conservatives who yell and scream about how they're going to take over, whatever. Mm-hmm. But mostly they're here because, A, they provide essential services, and B, employers don't have to pay them very much.
And C, they've been driven out of their small farms because of the genetically modified seed.
Yeah, okay, well, there's that, but that's sort of an externality right now. So we have this system that's inherently unequal. That if we make moves like this to legitimize it, then what does that do for those people in terms of rising out of a state of inequality into a more judicious state of affairs?
Well, I think we're just going to have to disagree about this.
Maybe.
I mean, I think it's a good idea to have people know how to drive and
I agree.
Be able to demonstrate it with a card. I don't think it's going to be something that's going to let them fly on planes and blow them up or something.
Is there a rash of traffic accidents right now because undocumented workers don't know the rules of the road in
the United States? I don't know.
I mean, is this a big epidemic that we need to address?
I don't know the answer to that.
Hmm.
I don't know that having a driver's license makes you a better or worser driver. I do know that having a driver's license makes you know the rules of the road.
I agree. Yeah, the driving issue is all well and good. I'm more concerned about the basic humanity of folks who are here without documentation and the inequities they are forced to endure on a regular basis. I'm more interested in arriving at a much more equitable situation there. I don't know if this measure does that.
Okay, let's agree to let that go for the moment. I just want to quickly get to measure number 89, which essentially is the Equal Rights Amendment. And I think it should be supported. I think it should be passed.
I think
it's a way to push again for the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, the ACLU is not agreeing with me.
No, and people I'm surprised by that.
Well, I am surprised by that, too. I think their argument is specious, but, you know, people should know that. I say vote yes on 89.
Yeah, and for those who say this is unnecessary, that women already have equality under the law, I would say, well, so what? The nature of rights is such that when a right is affirmed, that means that is a departure from the way things have gone historically, and therefore rights need to be loudly affirmed and in no uncertain terms. So whether or not you believe women already have equality under the law, I don't care. It's still important to write it down in the state constitution.
And the fact of the matter is that women are still paid a smaller salary than men for the same jobs.
Yep.
So this is a step toward equality.
Yeah.
All right. I think we should take a couple of calls.
Let's do that.
231-8187.
Warren, good morning.
Good morning, Warren. Quick.
Hey. George, good morning.
Good morning, guys. This is a comment on Measure 86. If you've got other things to do, this is brief. You might be interested. It's about class struggle, but I don't want to take your time unless you don't have time.
Go for a brief thing.
Okay, there's a guy named H. Bruce Franklin who, clear back in the 60s, was a pioneer in the Thou Shalt Not Kill by napalm and other activist measures. A professor now in one of the universities, and he wrote a book called Vietnam and Other American Fantasies. And with regard to Measure 86, on page 126 of his book, he quotes an education advisor to President Nixon as warning the president against supporting lower cost or free higher education. He says, this was Nixon's education advisor, quote, "We are in danger of producing an educated proletariat. That's dynamite. We have to be selective on who we..."
Thank you. We're running out of time. But
Let's hear it for an educated proletariat.
Yes, absolutely.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Next week, folks, Abe's not going to be here because he's smart. I'm going to talk about 9/11 Truth Out. Mm-hmm. You'll just love that show. Gather your evidence and be ready. 3-minute limits next week on what really happened in New York on 9/11.
Vote, damn it.
Vote.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Do you worry that corporate power is totally out of control? Tune into the KBOO Evening News every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. beginning August 5th to hear the new weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. I'll be sharing stories about communities that are rising up against corporate control and passing laws that exercise their right to govern themselves. That's every Tuesday on the KBOO Evening News beginning August 5th. Don't miss it.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, James Bopp and David Cobb debate Citizens United. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, a report from Mexico City on the kidnap torture killing of 43 Mexican student activists by members of a major drug cartel. And the weekly report from the Electronic Intifada, hosted by Nora Barrows-Friedman. And at 11 on Stage and Studio, host Dime Roberts focuses on Shaking the Tree Theater's adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's Mask of the Red Death. She also features Organic Nation Listening Club, a music performance evening by jazz and world music composer David Ornette Cherry. And at 11:30, Art Focus is off today. Instead, we'll hear the La Penca bombing remembered. 30 years ago, a bomb went off in a press conference in La Penca, Nicaragua. Journalists and others are still trying to get answers about the bombing. Thanks, KBOO members, for your outstanding support for our KBOO Community Radio. Now here's Alternative Radio.
Mr. Olson, are you taking the position